Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sacred Divergence Radio, with your hostess Reverend Elizabeth on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Listen in every Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and join us in the chat room as we discuss music, magic, spirituality, and more.
And good evening, everyone. This is your hostess, Reverend Elizabeth Hamilton, coming to you from beautiful Pennsylvania. And tonight we have with us Reverend Phoenix Williams, who is a high priest and mental health counselor. Hello, Phoenix, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
My brother, it's so good to hear your voice. I'm doing great.
It's wonderful. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Anytime. And we're going to be doing this once a month, right?
Absolutely.
You and me, excited. Awesome. I am too. This is going to be a great journey. I think a lot of people need to know more about mental health, and I think this is a great way to do it.
Word. I'm with you.
Yay! And Apu in the chat room is saying, hello, Lord Phoenix.
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Okay, so I guess we can start off by introducing our two menaces of the week, which is generalized anxiety disorder, also known as anxiety, and yep. Depression, also known as major depression or clinical depression or major depressive disorder or other things like that.
Yeah, well, a rose by any other name, you know?
Yeah, right? I know. They have, like, so many different names for the same thing. It's kind of confusing. So why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about anxiety and depression?
All right. Actually, so I was struck with a bit of inspiration not 23 minutes ago.
And you I know were?
Yeah. I know 23 is, like, a weird number to cite because, you know, like, there are a whole bunch of other numbers out there. But, like, literally 22 minutes ago, I was like, oh, my goodness, something, like, clicked inside of me. And it came from a story that I really, really love. And it kind of, for me, answers the question in a theological perspective of why do we have depression, right?
Like, awesome.
Why do we have this kind of suffering? And I thought of the story of Demeter and Persephone and Hades, right? So why do we have depression?
Right.
And it's kind of like we here in this physical plane, we feel what divinity feels. We go through what they go through in various stages, in various incarnations, and in various interactions. So, Lady Liz, are you familiar with the story of Kore, Persephone, Demeter, and Hades?
Yes, I am.
All
but
right,
our listeners
so
might not be, so tell us a short version.
Okay, so Kore is the maiden kind of virginal version of Persephone. She is Demeter's daughter. One day, this little girl is hanging out in the meadows, just chilling, playing, having a wonderful time. She gets kidnapped by Hades. She gets, you know, stranded in the underworld. She eats the pomegranate, and she has to stay down there. Demeter, her mother, frantically searches, finds her, and is unable to get her back because she ate food in the underworld. So what she does is she freezes, like, the entire earth, basically. Nothing grows. Nothing's happy again until Persephone returns, you know, for the warmer months of the year. So
right.
So I liken Demeter's, you know, her freezing the earth over and her perpetual down mood for those various months while her baby girl is gone, I liken that to her major depressive disorder.
Wow.
Because nothing grows, nothing shines, nothing is happy until her joy is restored to her, her baby girl, Persephone.
Wow, that is something, man. Oh my gosh. So, basically, when we're depressed, we feel like nothing is happening. Nothing in life is good, nothing is positive, nothing is growing, nothing is prosperous or fruitful or anything like that, right?
Exactly.
And that can really suck because it tells us that, you know, we're worthless or we're not worthy or
powerless,
what are some of the other
over our own circumstances.
Yeah, powerless. Exactly, powerlessness. And, you know, it can be really hard to overcome that kind of negative self-talk. And
absolutely.
for a lot of people, it can be so paralyzing that they don't even seek help. You know,
right.
when friends reach out and ask, hey, how are you doing? They just say, oh, I'm fine. Instead of saying, you know, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, I'm worried, I'm sad,
I'm really
I can't get over this. Yeah. You know,
right.
And
absolutely.
it can be so paralyzing that they don't even seek help, which
absolutely.
Is a really big hurdle for a lot of people. And I think that anybody listening to this, if you think that you have depression, talk to your doctor. Talk to somebody. Talk to your friend. Okay? The next time that somebody asks you how you're feeling, talk to them and open up to them and you'd be surprised.
It.
Be honest. Yes, honesty is the key, I think, for a lot of this. And, you know, it's being hard honest. You know, it's not something to take lightly. It's not something to brush off as if it were, you know, just another day of the blues. Everybody,
mm-hmm.
Everybody gets bad moods. And everybody gets a little bit of depression once in a while. But
yep.
Depression is, what are the requirements in the psychological realm for depression? Like, how long do you have to have the symptoms and stuff like that?
All right, so depression is on a spectrum. There's this thymic disorder, which is, you know, has a different time frame than a depressive episode, which has a different time frame from a major, you know, depressive disorder, right? But it all boils down to being depressed for a very long period of time, more often than not. And it's very arbitrary the way I've just explained it, but it's literally that arbitrary when you work to diagnose someone as well. So you look for these cluster of symptoms to diagnose a major depressive disorder. There's this, you know, symptom called anhedonia. It's a loss of pleasure in things that you used to enjoy. There's fatigue and also restlessness, irritability, weight loss, weight gain is also another one of the symptoms of a major depressive disorder. And a lot of people who do diagnose mental disorders look for a six-month time period. And in that time period, if you are depressed in any given 4 out of the 7 days, then it might be... Yes?
I thought you were breaking up there for a second. Sorry.
Oh, no. Sorry about that. So if you are more depressed than you are feeling any kind of happy emotion, it might be time to explore, you know, some treatments for clinical depression. If you have trouble sleeping, some insomnia, it might be time to explore that if there are some of the other symptoms that I just talked about going on. One of the symptoms that's not in the DSM, but I hear a lot of my, you know, participants, a lot of my clients talking about
uh-huh.
is they feel that their body is too heavy for them to move at all. So they just
yes.
stay in bed crying or just praying for something to happen that, you know, some foot will be lifted off their chest so they can get up at some point. Feeling like you're being followed by, and like, I'm not talking about a metaphysical kind of thing. but feeling like you're being followed by like this dark shadow that just will not go away, that just will not let up, that kind of taints the way you see everything. It might be time to seek some help or seek some treatment. And if these symptoms get in the way of multiple parts of your life, if you start doing poorly in school where you were once a decent student, if you have to miss more and more time from work because you can't get out of bed, if you're neglecting your children, if you're neglecting your spouse because you don't feel good, it might be time to seek some treatment or talk to someone about what's going on with you.
In the chat room, just shortly, briefly here, Afrofo points out that depressed people do not talk it over because most people don't get it, and it makes depressed people feel even more alone.
Yes, and I was just about to say that there's a huge stigma on mental illness.
Absolutely.
Because, first of all, I want to say that I don't have a diagnosis of any kind of mental disorder, but when I'm working with someone and I kind of have that empathy going on, when they tell me that their friends or family tell them to just get over it, part of my heart breaks a little bit, because if it was that simple, I feel like everyone would just be getting over it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just get over it. Gee, why the hell did I not think of that?
Yeah,
whatever,
you know, that makes
me, telling me.
That makes me really angry when I hear people say just get over it to me, because I have a few mental health disorders. I have anxiety and bipolar disorder. And when people tell me, oh, just get over it, it makes my blood boil. Let me tell you, nothing will piss me off faster than being told, oh, just get over it. You would not tell somebody with cancer or diabetes to just get over their illnesses.
Just because
it's an invisible illness does not make it less real.
Right. Or less physical.
Or less physical, exactly.
And I think that's the thing, that you can't see, you know, where depression is really acting. Like, you can't see the chemical imbalance. You can't see misfiring neurons. You know, you can't see neurotransmitters that are not being, you know, placed back in their right places. So it makes it a little harder to empathize with. You see someone with a broken leg, you know their leg is broken. You see the cast. You can empathize, you know.
Right.
You see someone in a wheelchair, you see someone on crutches, you can empathize because you can kind of see where the issue lies. But when the issue is in the brain, in the mind, you know, and it's emotional, something that you can't really see that well, all of a sudden empathy is kind of gone. It's up for question whether or not you have any kind of illness whatsoever. But it's really real. If you're listening and you do have a mental illness, or you feel like you do have a mental illness, trust me, there are people out there who can help you, who do understand what you're going through, and what you are suffering from is not a fantasy, it's not a figment, it's legitimate, and there is a way that you can work towards reclaiming your life. You can recover.
Yes, there is help, there is hope. Always keep that in mind, please. You know, I know, I've heard stories of, you know, a lot of people committing suicide because they aren't believed and they just give up hope. And that's, I think that's really sad. It's a waste of life. And, you know, just think of all the potential that is now gone because these people were brushed off by mainstream society, right? And it's so horrible to think about. It kind of makes me choke up a little bit, think about all those people who could have been helped, who could have been saved, who could have been recovering now from these mental illnesses. And, you know, it is possible to live a happy and healthy life with any mental disorder, I feel, as long as you get treatment.
And you learn how to manage yourself.
Yeah, you know, and it starts with you. Because, you know, you can go and you can have all of the mental health in the world from a mental health practitioner like yourself or a psychiatrist or a psychologist and not get better because you don't want to get better. You have to want to get better first.
Yep. You have to believe that it's possible.
Exactly. So now let's talk about a little bit about general anxiety disorder.
All right.
What are some of the things that... Go ahead.
Okay, so generalized anxiety disorder is... it's literally just that. It's when you're anxious about general things. Anxiety runs the gamut also of the spectrum. So you can have specific phobias, which cause an anxiety response. And the best way that I can describe an anxiety response is if you've ever been on a roller coaster, that moment you're about to shoot down for the first time, that feeling that you get in your chest where your heart is racing, you're probably breathing heavy, your chest may be a little tight, you might be starting to panic. Generalized anxiety disorder happens generally. There's no specific trigger for it.
It could be anything.
Yep. So, and it's literally a triggering of your fear response to any number of things. It could be exacerbated by being outside. It could be exacerbated by being in crowds. But those all kind of allude to more specific kinds of things. And generalized anxiety disorder is starting to be used kind of like as an initial diagnosis. You get generalized anxiety disorder if you haven't spent enough time with a therapist to know what your real anxiety is. Before, we would use anxiety disorder not otherwise specified as a diagnostic term. But now we're starting to see in the research that anxiety usually does have a specific contributor. So you get generalized anxiety disorder, and then you meet with your therapist or your psychologist for a greater amount of time, and you start to find out what the specific trigger is. And so usually it's linked to a more specific phobia, spiders, certain places, certain people. Some of the more kind of ones that you see in entertainment TV on the Maury Show are people who are afraid of like aluminum foil or buttons. But the ones that I see most are panics about being in crowds or riding the bus. Fears about going to the doctor's office. So anxiety is more than just not wanting to get an injection by your doctor. It's more than not wanting to go to the dentist. It's being damn afraid of whatever it is that's pushing on that nerve for you.
Right. And for some people, like me, it can be anything. Like, I panic about money. I panic about my social life. I panic about, you know, getting out of bed. You know, oh my God, am I going to be able to get out of bed? And it's like this, it's like a person is just sitting on your chest and won't get up. And it makes you short of breath, and it makes you hypertensive, like it makes you just want to run and never stop running.
Yep. Because anxiety absolutely can trigger your flight or fight response, which is something that not a lot of people understand, is that you will either run from or try to kill the source of your anxiety if you have a severe diagnosis.
Astrophobe says that he panics about people interfering with his life. And Tim Greenfield says that as a pagan, he panics about coming out to his friends.
Okay.
As a pagan. So those are some other triggers, maybe.
So
I don't know if they're severe
you.
Enough to be anxiety disorders, but...
Right, so certain things will cause anxiety, like an anxiety feeling, speaking in front of people for the first time. Or, you know, generally just public speaking. Until you get used to it, you get anxious about it. Coming out as a pagan to your friends and family might be a super big deal depending on where you are. Hell, in Africa, they still burn folks. Like, that's a pretty reasonable reason to have, you know. Yeah. and then when it comes to having panic about people, controlling your life, depending on where those people are, who those people are, if you see them when others can't, if there's a reason for people to be controlling you, like if you're on parole or probation, if that makes you anxious, then it's probably not an anxiety disorder. I'm not saying that it's absolutely not, but it's probably not. There are some psychotic disorders that come with anxiety type features, which that'll be an interesting segment when we get to magical thinking as magical practitioners.
Oh, yeah.
But so not everything is an anxiety disorder, even if it does cause or leads to an anxiety response. As far as treatment goes for both of those things, cognitive behavioral therapy is a great treatment to kind of get you used to what causes those issues, get you exposed to them, get you talking about them, and getting you support for them.
And what is cognitive behavioral therapy?
So the theory behind cognitive behavioral therapy, to put it simply, is that your thoughts kind of dictate your behavior, which leads to a confirming emotion that will either confirm your depressive or anxious state or refute it. Generally speaking, if you are someone who has depression, or if you are someone who has anxiety, you will notice that you have thoughts and experiences that confirm those automatic thoughts that you have, these schemas. So for people who are depressed, you might notice that a lot of things confirm the fact that you're worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, these people are mean to me at work. It must be because I'm worthless. This person rear-ended me. It must be because, you know, like, I'm a bad person. So many things could happen in your day-to-day life that could, you know, uphold this negative schema that you have about yourself. So how cognitive behavioral therapy works, it kind of forces you to argue against these automatic thoughts with
right.
other alternatives. They were mean to me at work because maybe they were having a bad day. This person rear-ended me not because I'm awful and because they wanted to destroy my car, but because they were not paying attention. Maybe that son of a you-know-what was texting. You know how folks do that these days?
Right, yeah.
So it might not have anything to do with you as an individual, but some other reason. And cognitive behavioral therapy can go on for long times, teaching folks how to argue against these so-called automatic thoughts.
Definitely.
Medication.
Medication is a big thing.
It is. And I know a lot of people out there will kind of be upset with what I'm about to say, but if you are someone who's against the medication and who refuses to take medication, all I'm going to say is don't knock it until you try it.
That's
there
right.
There are some responsible psychiatrists out there who prescribe medication responsibly. I will say that I do believe that the pharmaceutical industry is a huge business and they market off of creating illness, perpetuating illness, just to push these drugs out here. But I don't think
mm-hmm.
that every physician or every doctor, every psychiatrist plays into that scheme. So
right.
if you are ill, get treatment. Now, if you have a doctor who only wants to give you medication and is switching you to new different medications and is playing around for an extended period of time, so when you have depression, when you have anxiety, when you have bipolar, it might take a little bit of time for you to find the medication that's right for you.
Mm-hmm.
If over the course of your 10-year treatment, you've been on a bazillion different medications over and over again, and you're not seeing much of a difference, and they're not advocating for therapy, and they're not advocating for social supports, and they're not, you know, trying to help you find a way to wean yourself off and make lower dosages, you know, of your medication, something might be iffy. But if your physician is responsible, they're tinkering with your medication. You know, maybe you get a medication change every 3 to 6 months. And they're encouraging you to face your anxiety. They're encouraging you to find social supports for what you have going on. They're encouraging you to find a therapist. They're kind of cooperating on your treatment plan with, you know, other folks. There's a team of people working to help you. There's collaboration. They're taking what you need into consideration. Those are all signs of a responsible psychiatrist and people who are treating you responsibly.
So,
and then also, if you just feel good about being around your therapist, that's a good sign. So if you can't stand your therapist, stop going.
Yeah, you can absolutely fire your therapist. If you don't like your therapist, fire them and find a new one. If you don't feel that they're advocating for your...
Yes, that is the professional thing. Like, don't go away saying, oh, Phoenix said, stop seeing your therapist. No, replace your therapist with one that you like. That's
right.
The official, that's the professional, like, advice right there. If you don't like your therapist,
and,
find a new one.
And
in
the chat room...
Find a new one.
And in the chat room, we have a few opinions going on. Let's see, we have Apu Admanagama, who says, 10 years of treatment is too long to take medication. And then I told him that some people need medication for life, though. Like me, I can't stop taking my bipolar medication because there is no totally overcoming bipolar disorder. It's a mood disorder. It's a brain disorder. My brain doesn't produce the right chemicals to keep me in balance. You know, so I need this medication for the rest of my life. There's no cure, exactly.
Right.
There's no cure.
You learn to manage it. You learn to avoid things that, you know, have flare-ups. But you do, you know, battle it for the rest of your life if it's a serious and persistent mental illness. So you do want to stay in treatment for as long as you need.
Right, absolutely. Even if it is 10 or 20 years.
You might not be going to a therapist every week for 10 years. You know, after the two-year mark, you might drop down to once a month. You might drop down to once every 3 months, you know, just for these check-ins. But you do kind of want to have someone checking in on you regularly, you know, over the course of while you're dealing with this. The last thing you want is to be alone.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that a lot of people need to realize you are not alone. If you are listening to this, you can email me right now at lizhamilton88@gmail.com. And we can sit back and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. It doesn't matter. I don't care. You can ring me up 24/7 on my email address, and I will reply to you as soon as I possibly can. And I will talk to you, and I will help you through anything that I possibly can. I'm not a mental health professional, but I am willing to sit down and talk to anybody to help them out of anything. And it all starts with you. Yeah, it is really important. I think that more people need to be open and need to be... cognizant and aware of these mental illnesses, and that's part of why we're doing this show once a month now. And I think that we're going to go a really long way in dispelling the myths. And you know, that's the thing. What myths? Some of the myths around depression and anxiety. One is that you can just get over it.
Yep. There's one that, and this is kind of overall for a mental illness as a whole. And it's kind of that if you do have a mental illness, you no longer have an identity outside of that diagnosis. I really don't appreciate when folks start referring to other folks as bipolar. She's bipolar. He's depressed.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Like, you have bipolar disorder. You have major depression. You have generalized anxiety disorder. Just like you have a bad attitude, like these things, they can go in remission. And if you do have a mood disorder, you can still have a good mood or a bad mood without it being related to your illness. And that's what really kind of grinds my gears a little, especially in the case of bipolar. If you're in a bad mood, all of a sudden, you know, it's a bipolar thing. It can't be that you really are just kind of getting on my nerves. You know, if you eat my last turkey sandwich, I'm going to be in a bad mood, whether or not I have bipolar disorder. you know, if I have a lot to get done, I'm going to stay up really, really late and do it, whether or not I have bipolar disorder. If I'm feeling super excited, like I might be impulsive from time to time, whether or not I have bipolar disorder. You know, all these things can happen while you do have a diagnosis, and it can be completely unrelated to your illness.
Right.
Your life is not defined by the illness that you have.
Right.
You are not your diagnosis.
And, you know, some of the times I catch myself saying, oh, I am bipolar. And I've been trying to break that habit, but it's so ingrained and it's
right.
so hard to overcome. It's just, it's really difficult to say I have bipolar versus I am bipolar. And watching
right.
that language, I think it's really important for all of us, you know, to labeling, you know, I don't like labels. I mean, some labels are useful, like pagan, you know, because it gives us a general idea of what they're into. But
mm-hmm.
other labels are not so great, like, you know, oh, she's bipolar, or she's depressed, or, you know, she's this mental illness, or she's that mental illness. because I am are the most two powerful words in the world. And together,
Hello.
You know, what comes after that is what you are. So I am not my mental illnesses. I am Elizabeth Hamilton, who just happens to have a couple of mental illnesses. It doesn't make me less of a person. And I think that's what a lot of people need to realize, is that having a mental illness does not make you less. It does not make you less than. It does not make you less worthy. It does not make you less important to the world overall. It does not make you less important to your family and friends. You know, and these are a lot of things that I've been fighting with, you know, because the anxiety just worms its way in there and plays with your brain and is like, it just fucks with your world.
I do agree.
So we are at the bottom of the hour, and you guys are listening to Sacred Divergence Radio, episode 53, where Phoenix and I are discussing depression and anxiety and a little bit of bipolar tossed in there, too, just for flavor. I want to play a song, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk more about how it affects our lives as magical practitioners, because I know that a lot of you listening are magical practitioners and are probably wondering, how is this going to affect me as a witch, or as a pagan, or as a Wiccan? So we're going to be talking about that just after this song. We're only going to play one song tonight, because this topic is really, really awesome, and I love it. It's just great. We're going to play Lady of the Silver Wheel by Darv the Bard. I love Darv the Bard. Do you like Darv the Bard?
I do. Let's do it.
Awesome. All right, so we'll be back in about 5 minutes, folks. Keep listening. We love you all. And here is Lady of the Silver Wheel.
Gather up. them together, join them as one, the spindle begins to turn. A soul's new journey has begun on the earth with every birth. So the web that joins together all life is as one, daughter and son. Animal, human, old and young, Lady of the Silver Wheel, Lady of the Silver Wheel. Ariana, Lady of Changes, you spin the web of life. Lady of the Silver Wheel, Lady of the Silver Wheel. Ariana, Lady of Changes, you spin the web of life, the web of life. Autumn begins to fall, and the moon wanes and seasons grow cold. We all hear the ravens call, some while young, while others grow old. Oh, she sings, the last chorus begins, with a voice as gentle as winter's lace. A new thread through the wheel it is fed. Woe to those who see her face, Lady of the Silver Wheel, Lady of the Silver Wheel. Ariana, Lady of Changes, you spin the web of life. Lady of the Silver Wheel, Lady of the Silver Wheel. Ariana, Lady of Changes, you spin the web of life, the web of life, web of life.
And that was Darb the Bard with Lady of the Silver Wheel. You are listening to Sacred Divergence Radio, episode 53. And Lord Phoenix is here with me. He is a mental health counselor who has been chatting with us about depression and anxiety. And he will be here with us once a month to discuss various mental disorders, which will be announced before we discuss them. So you guys can listen in whenever you like. We are in the archives 24/7 for your auditory enjoyment, and we're back. So, in the chat room, we have a few questions. Apu Admanagama has a really good one. He asks, Lord Phoenix, can massage really be prescribed as one of the therapies in anxiety or depression?
Prescribed? No. Not to my absolute knowledge, but recommended, strongly recommended, absolutely. And here in the United States, there is a huge push for integrative treatment. So not just massage, but we're also looking at acupuncture, acupressure, Reiki, homeopathic and holistic medicines are all being slowly integrated into mental health treatment to kind of find a holistic and appropriate kind of treatment plan for each individual. And I'm actually super excited about that. I'm very happy to see that happening.
That is awesome.
Yes. But to answer the question plainly, I don't know of any therapist who's writing down, you know, 3 massages a week as needed, you know, on a prescription pad. But any good therapist will not shut you down from engaging in something that you think would help you as long as it, you know, is safe.
Right. And We also have a comment / question from Astrophobe, who says, let me find it. Oh, has your guest researched brain electricity and the neural pathways and pathway connections? I don't exactly know what that means, but
Yes, go for it. I have researched that, and I am super excited about some of the things that I'm reading. I do know as far as, you know, neuroplasticity and, you know, the such is concerned, that the brain is actually such a powerful thing that if you think about something, if you think about doing something, your brain starts to create the pathways in order for you to do it. So think of this far-fetched example. Now, let me tell you again, this is a far-fetched example. But if you think of yourself being able to fly like a bird, your brain is creating the pathways for you to learn how to do it. Now, it's going to take a very, very long time for humans to be evolved to fly like birds. But if we all start thinking like that, our brain is going to create these pathways to do it. If we think of ourselves, if we think of ourselves as being able to perform, you know, some kind of task that we can't perform, our brain starts to create these pathways for us to learn how to do it, to learn how to figure it out. So it's a hugely powerful thing, and you figure we don't use our brain to the fullest capacity. And I think neuroplasticity and pathways is kind of how we're going to evolve into using the rest of our brains.
Right. So, and then Tim Greenfield in the chat room has a wonderful question. And he says, if he wants to be a clergy member, how best would I console someone who suffers from depression?
That's a wonderful question. And as a clergy member who also works, you know, as a mental health counselor professionally, there is a field, pastoral counseling and care, spiritual direction. It hasn't really been developed from a pagan perspective, but if you want to consult someone who is in a major depressive state, who is grieving, who is sad, who is down, who is out, who's been kicked around by life, like we've all been kicked around, sit with them, look them in the face, listen to them, validate their experience. Don't offer to try and fix anything, because chances are they've tried most of the things that you could come up with. But just listen to them and be there with them and shoulder the burden with them. Being empathic is not as hard as folks would let you, you know, believe that it is. Look someone in the face when they're telling you their story, and imagine how you would feel if you were going through that very thing.
Right. And one thing to remember, as a clerical counselor, you cannot give medical advice.
Absolutely not. But you can refer someone.
Right.
You can't give out any kind of medical advice, but you can refer someone to an appropriate place.
Right.
And that's super important.
It's very important.
If you got someone's ear to the point where they're going to listen to you, refer them to an appropriate place.
And remind them that you will be there to listen to them whenever they need you, but that you are only a clerical counselor. You cannot give them medical advice because you are not a medical practitioner, unless, of course, you are, like you, Phoenix, and you have that dual ability and that training. Which is great. I would love to do that. That sounds really awesome. But it's going to take a really long time, and I don't have a whole lot of time.
it took me 6.5 years schooling to get to this point. Interestingly enough, though, I did it mostly right alongside my Corellian training. So with
that's awesome.
I took it by, So I really use them both to kind of support each other and guide where I wanted to go, you know, with my path.
That's great. So Apu Adman Agama says that he believes that New York City has a lot of alternative medicine clinics like meditation and yoga and Qigong and all that good stuff.
This New Agey movement has them popping up all over the place.
That's exactly what I said.
Just get in where you fit it. Get in where you fit in. It might take you a few tries to find what works out for you. It might take some time for you to build rapport with a group of people that you can sit and meditate with. But if you're going to search, go ahead and search. More power to you. I'm not going to tell you not to meditate. Like, seriously, go for it.
And Apu Admanagama also says that he believes that as clergy, we can facilitate healing circles and counseling sessions. And
absolutely.
I think that, yes, absolutely, we can do that.
And let me tell you that I do absolutely do soul retrieval in many a session with depressed clients.
Wow, that's awesome. So he also asks, do we have pastoral counseling certification? And in the Karelian tradition, we don't, that I know of. But there might be some professional certification out there somewhere. I'm not really sure about that one.
There really is. I've been seeking it out a lot. I've been doing some preliminary research, mostly when, like, I'm not doing anything else. I'm like, I wonder what else I can learn about the field of pastoral counseling. It's not something that is institutionalized from a pagan perspective, right?
Right.
But it's definitely something that happens between pagans. I would say pastoral counseling from a pagan perspective occurs when you go get a tarot card reading or any kind of reading and you leave feeling a little bit healed or feeling a little bit better about your situation or knowing a little bit more about your situation. I would call that a type of pagan pastoral counseling.
I would call that pagan pastoral counseling, definitely.
If you go to a medium and they're connecting you with a message from your ancestors and, you know, you're getting a little emotional and choked up and it's helping to heal you or release some karmic bondage, if you're working to heal some generational kind of issues down your family line, I would say that that counts as pagan pastoral counseling, or at the very least, something that's really kind of exclusive to witches, mediums, Wiccans, you know, folks like that who use those kind of methods to heal and to enlighten.
And Tim has another great question. When it comes to helping kids, should we refer them or attempt to assist? And my answer to that would be attempt to assist. What do you mean by attempt to assist, first of all? And refer. Referring is always a good plan because
yes,
it covers your butt.
Absolutely. If you perform a service that you're not qualified to perform, you are not protected under any means. Refer to someone who, you know, has the qualifications to do such a thing. Now, I'm telling you absolutely, if you see a kid on fire, put the kid out. If you see a kid who has fallen off the bike and they have a really bad, you know, kind of injury, bandage up the boo-boo, find their parents, let them go to, you know, a medical doctor. You're not going to perform open heart surgery. You're not going to, you know, perform any outrageous medical procedures on someone unless you're a doctor. So don't try to attempt to do anything as far as mental health is concerned if you're not qualified. Your intentions might be great, but it will come back to bite you in the booty.
Yeah, it's not a good idea to do that, so just don't do it. Trust us. You don't want to go there. So, let's see. It's 10:49, and we've been really talking about a lot of different stuff today, and it's been a really great episode. I'm loving this, having this topic. I love it. And so, what are we going to talk about next month, Phoenix?
Bipolar Disorder 1 and Bipolar Disorder 2.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. As a person living with Bipolar Disorder 2, it's going to be a great episode. And I encourage everybody to come and listen and learn and walk away with this feeling of accomplishment that you have done something awesome by learning, listening. And
I really do hope that people who do come and listen, I'll learn how to advocate church for people who are suffering from a mental illness. It's not nice. It's not fun. And if you want to be the change you want to see in the world, learn how to advocate for some folks. That's a great way to start.
And how can people advocate for others?
Make resources available. Put the judgery do down. No one likes a judge. Let's just put that out there. You don't know what someone's burden is, so do your best not to judge them. Make safe space for people to talk about what they're going through. So if you're going to ask someone how they're doing, be prepared for them to tell you how they're doing.
Right.
And, you know, be open and be honest. If you don't have time to listen to someone's whole life story or their whole trauma, or if you don't have the capacity yourself, be honest about that too. And instead of it, you know, turning into someone dumping their stuff on you, turn it into a shared trauma experience. If you're going to meet someone at that level, then meet at that level and make it as powerful as you can. Everyone has something to contribute to someone else's life.
Absolutely.
If someone is really unwell, don't be afraid to get the proper help. It's not fun. I have to do mental health arrests all the time. It really is not fun at all. Sometimes I do feel guilty, but I'd rather feel guilty about having someone put in the hospital because they really need it than finding out that I missed an opportunity to help save a life.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, going to the hospital is another stigma that a lot of people have trouble with, and I would just like to cover that briefly. There is no stigma. There should be no stigma and no problem with going to the hospital. That's what they're there for. Mm-hmm. If you need to go to the hospital because you're having suicidal thoughts or ideations, go to the hospital. Do not wait. If you have a suicidal thought or ideation, and ideation is just like thinking about suicide, go to the hospital. They might keep you for 72 hours. They might not, depending on how your evaluation goes with them. But there is nothing wrong with getting that kind of help. That's what they're there for. They're there for your protection and to help you become stable again.
And as far as
that's
how
my little spiel
two,
about that.
Absolutely. And as far as how these two, you know, particular illnesses affect magical people, believe it or not, there are 10,000 gods and goddesses out there. I'm sure one of them somewhere represents qualities that you are experiencing. So look for those and find comfort in that. I am sure there is a god or goddess out there who knows what you're going through and that you can draw strength from.
Absolutely.
Your rituals, your devotions don't have to be all bells and whistles. If you're depressed but you still want to practice, put the tambourine away, put the drums away, and practice to the best of your ability. Keep your spirituality alive the best that you can. Or consequently, if you really enjoy ritual and you enjoy the bells and whistles, do that more. Absolutely. As far as anxiety goes, if you're scared to leave the house, don't put all your stock in group rituals. If people freak you out, put your ideas of a coven on hold for a little while. Don't put yourself under that kind of pressure. If you're extroverted and you find comfort being around a lot of people, seek out meetup groups, seek out study groups in your area, go to some events, be surrounded by people who are supportive and who understand you and who are not going to judge you. Do what you can to make yourself feel good and to make yourself feel better. Take those steps, learn how this affects you, and learn to overcome it the best you can. That's part of, you know, taking your situation into your own hands. If you are living with a mental illness now and you're alive, then you are stronger than you know, because this thing didn't get the better of you yet. And it doesn't have to get the better of you. So go ahead and live your life according to, you know, like, you know you better than anyone else does. So I'll just put that out there like that. You are your own expert, no matter who you go see. So let that be the starting point. Think of the things that will make you feel better. If they're safe,
right.
If they're legal, if they're not likely to land you in a whole mess of trouble, go ahead and do that. And
absolutely.
Do more of that.
Yeah, do more of what will make you well. And, you know, if that means taking a long hot bath with some candles and some incense, go for it. If that means taking a long walk in the woods with a canteen and a bagged lunch, go for that. You know, just make sure to clean up after yourself.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness, this has been a marathon episode. I love it. It's wonderful.
A lot
and,
of great questions also.
Yeah, lots of great questions in the chat room. It's wonderful. We have 3 people in there, and it's been lively and discussing all kinds of different things related to these 2 mental illnesses. So I think this has been a great episode, and I thank you so much for coming on and joining us. Phoenix, you are my brother, and I love you a lot, and I'm really appreciative for this. This is really great, and I can't wait for next month's episode.
Me either.
So, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Find me on Facebook.
On Facebook, and you are Phoenix Williams HP on Facebook.
Absolutely.
And...
Yeah, I check my other messages folder often, because... I know folks do get filtered there. If you're friends with Lady Elizabeth Hamilton, then you can find me through her page in all of the Corellian groups.
Yep.
Seek me out.
Awesome. And Astrofo points out that cleaning up after yourself is a key point with depression. Is it true that depressed people are more likely to be messy?
No.
Is that a thing? No?
No, it's
okay,
not
so
more
that's,
like...
Okay, so that's a myth.
People are going to be more messy. Hygiene can become an issue, but it doesn't have to. So that's not a characteristic of all people who are depressed. People who suffer from depression are not more messy or less messy. The whole messiness factor really depends on individual personality. I am not depressed. I am messy.
Me too. I can't stand, well, I can stand being clean, but, you know, I have this
body,
issue with, well,
my,
yeah,
my clean
yeah.
clothes are on a pile. Like, my clean clothes are
yeah.
in a pile on the floor.
Exactly.
That's how I live.
Drawers are for, I don't know, organized people.
Cool.
I mean, but most of my clothes are in bins. I mean, I don't live off the floor, but...
Right.
So, yeah. All right. So, we're going to wind down for this evening. It's been great. Thank you so much for coming on with me. And, of course, I am Reverend Elizabeth Hamilton. You can find me on Facebook at Liz Hamilton. Liz.Hamilton88 is my... /thing, facebook.com/Liz.Hamilton88. So if you want to friend me there, friend me. And please let me know, like, in a message. I do check my inbox, too, as well. Where you found me at? Like, if you heard an episode and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I want to be friends with you, please let me know. Otherwise, I'm bound to be like, who the hell are you and why are you friending me? So just send me a message there, and I will then go ahead and friend you on Facebook after we chat for a little bit. And you can always catch up with me and what I'm doing on my media page, E. Hamilton Media. You can just Google Elizabeth Hamilton Media, and it'll pop up on Facebook. And, of course, you can also give Sacred Evidence Radio a like. It is facebook.com/Sacred Evidence Radio. Every episode is posted there, and sometimes, if I have time, I do let people know what is going on by the moment. But this time, I didn't have really a lot of time because we were talking and we got into it, and it went off without a hitch, and I'm really happy for all that. So stay tuned for next month's episode. Let's see. Let's schedule the date right now. Let's have it be the first weekend. How's the second for you? The 2nd of August.
The 2nd of August. Wait, is that when the Canadian legislation is going on?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I know I'm doing that August.
Okay, well then let's have it be the second weekend. Let's have it be the 12th, the day before my birthday. Oh wait, not the 12th. The 9th.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, so on the 9th, we will be having a discussion about Bipolar 1 and Bipolar 2. So I hope all of you in the chat room join us for the episode. And spread the word. Get more people in here. Tell them that we're having this conversation. And August 9th is the key date to look for next time. And until then, may you all very blessed be.
Blessed be.
I love you, brother. Thank you so much. And we'll talk
absolutely
to you next time,
night.
Okay? You
yes,
too.
Sir.
Night. Love you. Let me get my outro music here. Oh, I gotta scroll all the way up. I should have had that ready. I didn't think about it. Sorry, guys. Okay, here we go. Later, guys. Oops, wrong one. That was the generic outro. I want my outro. Where is that? Rejoin canned outro. Here we go.
Thank you for listening to Sacred Divergence Radio with your hostess, Reverend Elizabeth and friends on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Have a topic for us to discuss on air? Connect with Reverend Elizabeth at sacreddivergenceradio@gmail.com and on Twitter at sdivergence with hashtag #topichat. See you next week at 10 p.m. Eastern here on Sacred Divergence Radio and the Spiritual Unity Radio Network.